Hello all and welcome back to Risky Business for 2008. I am your host, Patrick Gray. I've had a great few weeks off playing in the sunshine, but it is good to be back in the Risky Biz hot seat, I have to admit. Now, before we get to previewing the contents of this show, just a quick reminder, you can now join the Risky Business Security Podcast Group on Facebook. If you're one of those Gen Y Web 2.0 types who's into texting, twittering, microblogging, social networking and the like, I set it up a while ago, and this is a bit embarrassing, but it only has 15 members so far. Now, come on, listeners, we've got thousands of you guys out there listening to the show. Get off your bums and join the group. If you're a Facebook member, that would be grand. Now, if you're a first-time listener, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. You can get it through iTunes or any other podcatcher you'd like, or you can sign up for our weekly email reminders. Just follow the links on the IT Radio site at itradio.com.au/security. Now, this week's show is a simple one. We'll just be chatting with our regular news hound, Mania Katadia from ZDNet Australia, about the recent news headlines. And then we'll be hearing an excerpt from a presentation by securityassessment.com's Morgan Marquis-Bois from a recent conference. I think they have since been acquired by some Singaporean company. Can't remember what they're called at the moment. We'll research it. We'll let you know next week. The topic is X25 networks. And if you still have some X25 gear in your enterprise, you'll want to stick around and have a listen to his presentation. It's a little bit freaky and not in a good way. But let's get into it now with our regular catch-up with ZDNet Australia's editor, Mania Katadia, who will be discussing recent security news. Now, Mania, the Australian Federal Police is having a little bit of difficulty in investigating high-tech crime because the high-tech qualified agents are in such high demand.
Yeah, that's right. They say for a start they're being poached by enterprises who can offer them more money, and they're also being used for when they're going away and doing stuff in other countries as well.
Yeah, it seems they keep getting seconded to some of the overseas deployments that the Australian Federal Police is doing, and yeah, poaching from the private sector is a big issue.
I tell you what, did you read the story that we wrote, I think, last month or so, where we had the AFP come in and bust the cyber cafe in World Square, just downstairs from our offices?
Yeah, I did read about that.
There were 10 of them there. Okay, now, can't possibly be telling me that they were having issues, you know, dealing with local crimes when they sent 10 people to go and bust the cyber cafe.
Well, I don't know how the typical investigation works really to that level, but I mean, there are a lot of AFP officers being sent away, and I know that, you know, the big accounting firms and IBM and companies like that love poaching law enforcement guys because it gives so much credibility to their, you know, cybersecurity practices.
Yeah, I can see that, and I'm sure they can pay them a lot more as well. But
well,
really, I think it's more of them sorting out their resources internally. I mean, I was quite shocked when I saw all these guys downstairs, and they were all, like, busting these guys. And what were they doing there? I don't know.
Well, another issue too is that increasingly there are high-tech elements to traditional crime. So a lot of the guys who are high-tech crime experts are being, you know, seconded off to the, you know, drugs bit to put keyloggers on some drug lord's laptop, you know.
Yeah. I guess maybe they're going to start doing more of that though, you know. I mean, we've already seen quite a few stories over the past year about there being the official, you know, Trojans, the police Trojans and whatever. So maybe we're going to see a lot more of that this year just to help them out with their resources.
Well, even with forensics and doing searches, like I think they can get warrants to examine certain bits of data and stuff. And they basically need geeks across a whole range of crime types these days. But let's move on. This is an interesting item. We shouldn't dwell too much on it, but the Stormworm, which is, you know, the botnet that I suppose gets a bit of grudging respect from the security community because it's so well written, is actually being used to host phishing sites these days instead of just sending spam and whatnot. They're actually hosting sites on compromised bots.
Yeah, it's a smart move. I mean, you know, we've got here one of the security guys saying here, from F-Secure, saying that they're noticing the IP address of phishing sites changing every second or so. I mean, that's pretty bloody tough to break down, isn't it?
Well, it is. And, you know, the organisations like AusCert have actually been doing a fairly good job in taking down phishing sites. They can get it down to a matter of, I think it's around 20 minutes. I mean, don't take that as gospel, but they've put the relationships in place with all the certs around the world so that if someone identifies a phishing site, they can knock it offline pretty quickly. And this is a whole other headache for organizations charged with removing phishing sites from the internet.
Yeah, this is the fish is just changing another gear, basically.
Yeah. So the arms race continues.
Right.
This next little item I just had to include because it's funny.
You're talking about the wiretap, aren't you?
Yeah, the FBI had a wiretap cut off because they forgot to pay their phone bill.
It's brilliant. Can you imagine? It's actually AT&T or whatever over there. They're the ones who are fiddling now and stopping the FBI from doing their investigations because they didn't pay the phone bill. It's great here. They've got the Justice Department's Inspector General saying that the FBI has got poor handling of money used in undercover investigations.
Yeah, I don't know what they're spending it on, you know, lap dances and martinis, but they're definitely not spending it on the phone bill. This is great. They cited a case in which a wiretap under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which governs electronic spying in terrorism and intelligence cases, was disrupted due to an overdue bill. We nearly had Bin Laden, but we forgot to pay the bill, you know. An audit report said late payments have resulted in telecommunications carriers actually disconnecting phone lines established to deliver surveillance results to the FBI, resulting in lost evidence, including an instance where delivery of intercept information required through an order was halted due to untimely payment. So, good one, FBI.
Nice work there.
This next bit of news will give some pause, actually, to people who operate websites, because there's just been this absolutely massive automated SQL-based web attack.
Yeah, that's right. They say at least 70,000 sites have been compromised in a short period of time.
Yeah, the SANS Internet Storm Center and a few other mobs have published details about this massive SQL-based web attack that happened. It could have been December or early Jan, whatever.
Yeah, it was early January. I think it was the weekend before last.
Yeah, okay. And 70,000 sites were compromised in a short period of time, leading some to speculate this was an automated attack. Gee, do you think?
I don't know. They could have had 70,000 monkeys doing it.
Yeah, I was just about to say 1,000 monkeys and 1,000 typewriters. But yeah, it looks like it was it exploited a variety of SQL injection vulnerabilities on websites. So it looks like someone out there is collecting a bunch of compromised websites that they can use for phishing and, you know, PayPal scams and things like that. And they can also redirect, you know, people through frames or whatever to their own domain, which will, you know, silently install a bunch of malware on the computers of people who visit those sites.
That's right. But one thing is, though, that apparently they were taking advantage of a system that was patched basically in September 2006.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, I mean, more than a year they've had to patch it. That's not really a surprise it's being attacked.
Well, it's still low-hanging fruit. I mean, I don't think many, you know, large enterprises with security managers would get affected by this, but, you know, the web, anyone can set up a website, and that's the problem, isn't it, really? Okay. Microsoft's last patch was a doozy with a completely, utterly critical jumping up and down vulnerability in the TCP/IP for Windows, which could allow remote code execution. I've called it the ping-to-pwn vulnerability.
Like that.
Yeah, it's catchy, isn't it?
It is. Interesting to see Vista totally affected by this.
Yeah, but this is such a low-level bug, you know, like actually in the IP stack by the looks of it. And, the patch modifies the way the Windows kernel processes the IP structures that contain multicast and ICMP requests. I think I read something about it being an IGMP vulnerability as well, and I'm pretty sure it affects systems by default. I think it's not so much of a disaster these days because most people at home are sitting behind some sort of Linksys or D-Link router at home, but it's certainly one of those vulnerabilities that is serious.
Yeah, well, if you do get through, Microsoft says it best. An attacker who successfully exploited this vulnerability could take complete control of an affected system. An attacker could then install programs, view, change, or delete data, or create new accounts with full user rights.
Hooray! Nice one, Microsoft. But still, they did very well to silently patch this. I understand, though, that Internet Security Systems, which is, of course, now a division of IBM, they actually had a signature for this one quite a while ago, because I think they actually found the bug. Now, that's pretty serious. I'm surprised no one actually reverse engineered the signature and discovered an exploit for this thing prior to the public disclosure of the bug.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, I didn't know about that. Yeah,
I'll have to put one of your minions on it. Maybe
I reckon so. Yeah.
But you heard it first on IT Radio. All right. Now you and I both follow developments in the Facebook sphere.
Oh, we do indeed, yeah.
And Facebook has actually banned an application, the Secret Crush application, due to its affiliation with a notorious spyware manufacturer. Zango was the company that sued Kaspersky and who else was it? It was one of the other antivirus makers saying that their software blocking Zango from being installed was interfering with their business. And the lawsuit ruled for Kaspersky in the other instance. But these guys have tried to rebrand themselves or tried to portray an image of being a clean company, but it seems Facebook doesn't like them and they've pulled the pin.
This is just the start of it, isn't it? It's the first one I think I've heard of that's actually been banned, or it's the first one anybody has made a big deal of. But there's been so many annoying applications on Facebook. You just know it's going to get worse and worse, and I'm sure this is the first of many that can and should be banned.
Yeah, it's not the real bad guys who seem to be benefiting from Facebook. It's the sort of semi-legitimate grey market operators, you know, who do things like premium SMSs that cost you $6 a pop and whatnot. But I think, yeah, I think it's going to turn into a, well, hopefully it won't turn into a bit of a cesspit. But, you know, what other motivation is there for people to create these applications unless they can reap some sort of revenue somehow?
How long do you reckon until there's a security application for Facebook?
Oh, that'd be funny, wouldn't it?
Yeah, like anti-spam, block you from all those stupid zombie things and fun wall invites and all the other crap you get.
Would it come in the form of a Facebook application?
I reckon that'd be great. Why don't one of the security companies knock one of those up and I'd probably load it.
I think you're onto something there, mate. Now, this is, of course, probably the most interesting and big news story from a navel-gazing point of view, but the Boeing Dreamliner.
Oh, God,
scandal,
yeah.
It seems that the FAA in the United States, the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration, it got a bit cranky with Boeing for when it found out that its, you know, entertainment network in the plane was actually connected to its control system.
Well, that's not, I mean, how can you, it just, oh. I'm speechless. How do you do this? Okay, so we've got a plane. We want to offer our passengers a bit of internet connectivity. I know. Let's use the same network.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
I mean, they've said, oh, well, you know, we're using a combination of air gap and firewalls, but it sounds like they're not completely physically isolated, and that is a problem.
I think it's just crazy. I mean, it's got here, it allows new kinds of passenger connectivity to previously isolated data networks connected to systems that perform functions required for the safe operation of the aeroplane.
Yeah, it's heavy. And what's really interesting is everyone's written this up as, oh, well, the passengers could take care, you know, could actually take control of the plane. Now, what if here, if someone's actually on, you know, browsing the internet from one of these Dreamliner consoles in the back of their seat or in the back of the seat in front of them or whatever, what's to stop someone on the internet actually taking control of that terminal and then messing with the plane systems?
Oh, geez, I never thought of it that way. That's pretty crazy, isn't it?
So someone on the ground, I mean, you or I, could actually take control of this plane. I mean, look, that's a big leap. I'm sure that they put some work into securing these networks, but you'd hope. But every time someone says, oh, these systems are isolated, it turns out to be complete horseshit. I mean, we've seen that with SCADA systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
You know, people are like, oh, don't worry, we've got firewalls on it and, you know, nothing can get through. But people always find a way. So,
what if there was a Trojan or something that could be planted onto that?
Well, exactly. You know, I just think this is a completely, yeah, this is insane. And I think maybe they're trying to save money by saving on cabling in the plane or... But it doesn't really matter, does it? Because that's
just an
insane way. No,
it doesn't. That's pretty crazy.
You don't want your flight systems connected to your home, you know, to your internet connectivity that the passengers can use.
That would be pretty... It's a daft idea. I don't know how this got out, but thank God we all know about it now, and hopefully they'll do something about it.
That's more of a British turn of phrase, and I love it. It's daft. We could call Boeing... Boeing, you are daft. Okay, well, let's just hope that this public awareness... we'll do something about it, and good on the FAA in the US for actually catching this in the first place.
Yep, too right.
Now, Munir, you pushed this news item in our direction. There was a Microsoft OneCare patch that was issued some time ago, which has, to use a technical term, has balked the systems running it.
Yeah, they updated it to OneCare 2.0 late last year, and basically a whole lot of people have been complaining. Microsoft said it's only 1% of their customers, but that's still an awful lot of people. And what the customers are saying is that OneCare doesn't start automatically after a reboot, and so you have to manually start it, and other times it just doesn't work at all. So good on Microsoft one more time.
Yeah, well, they're expecting to release a patch for that on January 31, but you wonder how something this big slips through to the keeper, don't you?
It just keeps happening. And in the story there, I can't get the quote right in front of me, but Microsoft said, yes, whenever we do this kind of update, you're bound to have some people that have issues.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people to have issues, really.
You got to wonder, though, what is causing those 1% to, you know, have problems when the other 99 aren't. And, you know, it's got to be that it's conflicting with some other bit of software or... You know, it's just they screwed up a regression test or something like that. But, I mean, come on, you got an install base like Microsoft's. You're always going to have these problems.
That's true.
You know, it's impossible to test for everything. Now, we've got a bit of news that relates to Mynear here. Mynear, you are finally paranoid enough to stick some tape over the camera in your Mac.
I did. I at the end of last year, I wrote a security roundup for 2007, and I thought last year was the year that Apple security finally died. And I don't have an antivirus on my Mac, and I just think, well, I don't use the camera. I'm going to put some tape over it.
Yep.
So there you go, a little black bit of tape over my black MacBook. You can't really see it. It's actually quite good, but I feel a lot safer now.
If you used like a little bit of medical tape, you could actually call it a patch, couldn't you?
I like it.
Or you could get a little eye patch made. A little
an
MacBook
eye patch for my eyesight, yes.
Yeah, eye patch. I think we're going to have to come up with that, mate. We need to do a little eye patch.
I like
eye patch and have a MacBook there with a little pirate eye patch on it, you know, skull and crossbones.
Arr.
Okay, mate. Well, look, thank you very much. Welcome back.
It's great to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back on deck. And, you know, here we go for another year of risky business.
We look forward to 2008 and what it's going to bring. I'm a bit worried, though. I think it's going to be a scary year.
I think it is as well. I'm wondering if this is the year that computer security will be to our civilization what lead plumbing was to the Romans. You know?
Oh, dear. Well, that's very well put. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens, and I'm sure we'll be here to laugh at them about it.
Okay. We'll be the ones laughing on the ship that's going down. But, yeah. Mate, great to have you back, and we'll chat again next week.
All right, mate. Chat to you then.
That was ZDNet Australia's Mynear Kataria there with the news headlines. And if you'd like to read those stories, point your browser towards zdnet.com.au/news. It's time now to listen to Morgan Marquis-Bois scare the pants off everyone who has X25 gear. As you'll hear, one of the problems with X25, it's an old data network, is the telcos have been phasing it out for so long that no one seems to have done much to fix its security. It's a dying network, so there's simply no motivation to patch it up. But some industry sectors are simply refusing to stop using it. It's still relied on heavily in the developing world, and even by Western finance companies. It's still out there. Now, Marquis Bois is a security consultant with securityassessment.com, and here's about 10 minutes of his presentation.
X25 is sold as a service by telcos. Being as it's sold as a service by telcos, it's all about the billing. Subscribers are billed for data traffic, and every subscriber is given what's known as an NUA. And this is an international X25 address. It's assigned to a lease line, which may have many channels coming into it. Now, most key from a security perspective is that these addresses are reserved and should not be disclosed. Unfortunately, a lot of X25 relies on security through obscurity. So there's over 100 worldwide X25 networks. SprintNet and MCI are the big global ones. Then there's TimeNet, AT&T. There's the PAC networks like IdaPAC and TransPAC, the NET networks, PACNET, ISRANET, ROSNET, which are New Zealand, Israel, and Russia, respectively. There's a lot of different ways to connect to X25 networks. You can connect directly if you buy a lease line from a carrier. X28 pad dial-up, and that's X28 is the standard way of communicating between you, say a modem, and an X25 pad. And these days, sort of X25 over TCP. So a little bit of history in X25. You guys have actually probably heard of a lot of this stuff. 1980s, Hagbart and Pingo break into the US military, government computers, and sell secrets to the KGB. If any of you have read Cuckoo's Egg by Clifford Stahl, the 1990s, MOD and LOD crash AT&T systems. X25 links provide them with the final links. The book, Masters of Deception, actually, The Gang That Ruled Cyberspace, is totally awesome. It actually describes this in some detail. For the Aussie guys who are here, The Realm, The Melbourne Crew, X25 Access, they were all X25 hacking until internet access was available. The NSA, the NASA Wankworm, which was allegedly them, was done through X25. Kevin Mitnick's eavesdropping on the FBI, X25. 2000, and this is actually 2003 to 2005, so this is really current. There's actually an article published in Frack about it. Russian hackers run wild on SprintNet. And if you look at it, there's the article's quite amusing. It's this Russian guy dissing on the SprintNet admins in his country because they've set up all the pads. So you can connect to them, you don't need NUIs, you can just connect wildly through, and boom, you're globally authenticated to the worldwide X25 network. Right, that's it. Given the critical nature of the stuff that runs over it, it's pretty damning. So, security differences between X25 and modern networks. Well, X25 addressing is reserved, so a lot of the security is actually knowing the addresses you want to dial. There's no IP stack, and you don't really have the same exploit culture as we do today. Once authenticated to the network, you're on it globally, so you can attempt to connect to pretty much anyone. So, common attacks, you'd war dial to enumerate NUAs. Once you're there, you'd brute force logins, and again, this pretty much always works. You're talking about systems that have been put in 10, 15, 20 years ago. Passwords change once or never. Traditional stuff like trashing and social engineering is really good to get NUIs and NUAs. Frequently, people will be really, really helpful and just provide you with this information because they don't get asked about it often enough. And what was really interesting while I was researching this talk is internet-based intel gathering. So, as I've just explained to you, NUIs and NUAs should not be disposed ever. It's pretty critical information. If you have these, then you win. Now, the internet forgets a lot of stuff about X25, as I found when I wanted to find a lot of information out. However, it also remembers in the form of archive.org. Now, Inmarsat operates a constellation of geostationary satellites designed to extend phone, fax, and data communications all over the world. So it also provides ground-to-air communications for airlines. I found airline documentation complete with current NUI and NUA information on how to connect to the airplanes via X25. So you can still find a lot of public information about X25 connections that shouldn't be available. So you can take the stuff off the internet, but evidence of your idiocy will last forever. I decided not to publish these NUIs and NUAs because prank calls to airlines from the pub, while funny, may lead to the wrong sort of attention. So, war dialing is another really traditional attack against X25. Like, you saw the Banana Republic doc. This Arnold Schwarzenegger fellow just war dialed a really large range in New Zealand, then published the NUAs that he'd got in a stolen NUI. He had tools like Voodoo, which is just a shell script, runs on Solaris for rolling through NUA enumeration. Commonly, you'd use abuse PBXs, outdials, because if you do this from your own phone line, you're likely to get a visitor. So X25 subscribers generally run really big networks because X25 is hideous expensive. So if you're still paying for it, chances are it's big and it's important. Abuse of X25 resources means that money gets billed, which means you're actually committing fraud, as well as other hacking-related abuses. Now, an acquaintance of mine wrote a script. He wrote a script to scan for reverse charging pads. Now, these are pads that will let you onto the X25 network and information we build back to the subscriber. He generated more traffic than the X25 network had seen in a really long time, and a gentleman showed up to his door, which was because they couldn't call him because his phone was always engaged. however, there are ways around getting a visitor. We live in the age of the future, anonymity and VoIP. You need a local VoIP provider to dial short numbers, which is a drag, so dialing X25 networks is generally a local number provided by the telco. Unfortunately, there's a lot of ways to sign up for fraudulent accounts, the local VoIP providers. Now, you've got anonymity services to hide your IP, like Tor, Relax, which is a really cool one out of Sweden. You can use bogus PayPal or stolen credit cards. I'm not going to explain to you how to do that. I'm shooting through it at yourselves, if you're so inclined. But paralyzed VoIP war dialing is the key here. The number of lines you use is sort of constrained by the bandwidth that you have at your disposal. So it used to be that A, you didn't want to dial from your house, and B, you may only have so many phone lines. If you can get 30, 40 paralyzed lines, then brute forcing NUAs becomes a far quicker procedure. You've got tools like iWAR or Hi to IVR, which is available courtesy of MetalStorm from storm.net.nz, which is a far better tool. I know, he's blushing. What can be done about these problems in X25 security? Well, the problem is there's not a wild amount of interest anymore because No one will throw a budget at it because it's officially being deprecated. No one really wants to know about it. So if you're a subscriber to the X25 and you complain about the security issues, they'll offer to sell you some IP, even if it doesn't cover your existing needs. Security consultants don't generally tend to know a whole heap about X25, nor do the security staff at people who provide you with X25. And again, audit firms and so on, it's not generally their level of technical expertise. So in conclusion, the reason why I've talked about SCADA and X25 is because there's more out there than Web 2.0. Just because a network isn't TCP/IP doesn't mean that it's secure, it won't be hacked, it can't be hacked, no one knows about it. Non-IP networks don't get tested or secured adequately. People don't think about them. And it's because all your enforcement and security guys these days are IP guys. They're generally firewall guys. And as said, these older technologies were designed in a more civilized age, and as such, are rather vulnerable to the wonder of modern technology that we have available to us. Cool. Thanks a lot. East cutting new ones, soldiers dinosaur, rats don't flee.
Drink your wine juice, soldier has it. That was Morgan Marquis-Bois from the company formerly known as securityassessment.com with that presentation that he did a couple of months ago. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. I'm headed back out into the sunshine to enjoy myself. Until next week, I've been Patrick Gray. And taking out the show this week is a track from a great Aussie band, Marshall and the Froe, and this song's been used with permission. You can grab their album from most record stores. See you all next week. Adios. I can't walk straight now. The tails are too short. Thieves cut new wounds. Soldiers better songs. And rats don't flee. Oh, now. Close their eyes and shut. Soldier running fear. Where have they been? Oh, oh. Hope their hands are tied. Soldier act on fight. Try not to fall now. Fight your own war. Though they're in cold. Fool for your call. Wherever you shall go. Wherever I fall down. Wherever we lay low. I can't walk straight now. The tales are too short. I can't walk straight now. The tales. The tales are gonna be too short. I can't walk straight now. The tales gonna be too short. Continues, it goes on.